And in 3, 2,
thank you,
and
voice.
1.
Okay, and doing the intro in 3, 2,
this
1.
This week in Geek.
This Week in Geek, we talk Overwatch League, League of Legends, and blockbusters.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of This Week in Geek. We are recording this on a Thursday night because schedules are difficult to do when you are an adult. It's so much easier like when you're a kid and you're like your schedule's like built out for you and all you have to do worry about is school. You remember that, Kevin?
When our lives
were not complicated.
Yeah, it was a lot easier. I just I didn't like the 8 a.m. start. That could have been easily patched, but other than that, yeah, it's not too bad.
Now kids today are starting at like what 9, 10 a.m. They don't have
to
struggle. I mean, it's not that like I wish them to go through a struggle, but like when we had to wake up early for our education. Like the sun was not even out when we were waking up. So
so
how have you been this week, Kevin? What have you been up to?
I've been okay. I've just been playing a lot of TFT because of there's a new patch that we'll kind of go over, plus the next event has been announced, but that's what I've been doing that. I'm prepping to possibly get ready for a Valorant cast with my alma mater. So I got to relearn Valorant too. So that's going to be another thing. But other than that, it's just pretty much cruising, working on more TikTok content and just keeping that flow going.
How's the trivia nights? How's them going?
I only have like a couple of them every once in a while. It's more like, how can I describe it? So I'm currently filling in for somebody. Whenever they can't make their one, like I'm the one who comes in and like fills in that gap. More recently, the guy who runs the whole thing is like, hey, we might have a weekly gig for you, so I might be able to run trivia for myself out of a separate spot rather than having to cover for that guy every single week. So that's gonna be pretty cool. I stuck around a little bit for the Halloween trivia this week. So some of the questions were pretty easy considering like the film school stuff actually kind of helps there. But other than that, like most of the trivia questions were pretty standard. There was one called, I think it was like supervillains, like IRL supervillains or something like that. And like it went over like Martin Shkreli as like one of the questions. I was like, oh my god,
Pharma bro, I haven't heard of him in a while.
It's like I know the answers to these, but I don't want to know the answers to these. Thanks. But yeah, that's how that went. It was pretty fun overall. I enjoy running trivia, and I do think that it's fun. It just depends on like the question in the crowd. As long as the crowd is like into it, like I really don't mind. What about you, Matt? How was your week? How's everything going on your end?
I don't like working. so there's that. It's like, on one hand, I'm glad I have a job, but on the other hand, it's like, I don't want to work. I'd rather just like do nothing all day or do theater or sleep or find some creative use of my time rather than being a wage slave. But here we are. That's how capitalism works. Other than that, I've just been playing Starfield more because we have a guest to interview on Monday, as you mentioned at the top of the... we didn't mention it. We mentioned it at the end of the episode. I keep forgetting because we're recording things, and I put that at the very end. But yeah, no, so I finally got in touch with Maddie because now my schedule is much cleaner because I will be taking a week for vacation next week, and I don't have theater rehearsals right now, so... I have time to do things. So on Monday at around noon, we're going to be interviewing Maddie on Zoom about doing voice directing and stuff. And she worked on, I think, Deathloop also. And she also worked on Fallout 76, which I've played Deathloop. I have not played 76, but I know that there's, as an RPG, there's a lot of voices in both of those games. So should be a lot of fun. I'm excited. I haven't talked to her in since before the pandemic, but yeah. And aside from that, I've been doing a little bit of reading and a whole lot of sleeping, working on Tears of the Kingdom still and playing some Overwatch, but that's been it pretty much for me this week. Speaking of reading, Kevin, were you normal as a child, or did you have an unhealthy obsession with the Aragon series of books?
I was one of the few that didn't do Aragon.
Really?
Yeah. I somehow dodged that one. I don't know how that happened, but
wow.
Yeah.
Oh my god. So if you don't know what Aragon is because you're too young for it, or you were like Kevin, dodged it.
I was into the Harry Potter books, and then okay. That was kind of like the substitute.
They're very different, though.
Yeah.
They're very different. I mean, it's at least so far, Christopher Paolini has not come out as a raging, awful,
terrible
human
person.
Being.
Yeah.
So at least we have that still. But if you don't know, Aragon was a series of books that came out in the early 2000s. 2004, I believe, was when the first one came out. And when that came out, like, everybody in my class was reading that book. Like, it'd be silent reading time. You see, like, what, 25, 30 blue copies of this book pop out. And everyone was reading it. It has had a really, really cool cover. That's what got everyone into it, is the dragon painting on the cover. It was so cool. They made a movie of it at one point, and I was so excited for it as a kid, but it turned out to be hot garbage. I think that's the first time I've ever been like disappointed by Hollywood. Don't watch the movie. It sucks. But originally it was supposed to be three books, and it turned into four because the third one was too goddamn huge. I didn't think the ending was that great. Kevin, have you seen you've seen Soul Eater, right?
Yes, I've seen Soul Eater.
You know how
yeah.
Soul Eater ends, kind of just like the friendship and I'll make you understand kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's how this book series ends. They okay. beat the big bad by like, I'm gonna make you understand how much pain you've caused everybody. And that somehow like makes him even more insane and they kill him somehow like that. I don't understand it. But anyway, also I have a quick story. So in sixth grade, like I was one of the know-it-all kids in sixth grade, which I you could probably tell that about me. But like I loved this book series so goddamn much that in sixth grade, one of the kids in my class who was like a certified idiot, like he was one of those class clowns who was just like, at least you've got that going for you because you have nothing else going for you in your life. Like you're just awful. All around. And he wasn't even that funny. He was just kind of the mean kind of funny. He just like made random jokes because they couldn't pay attention in class. But anyway, hated this guy. He did a book report on the second book in this series called Eldest. It's Aragon, Eldest, Brisinger, and I can't remember the last one. The last one's the green one. Inheritance. Aragon, Eldest, Brisinger, Inheritance. He did a book report on Eldest, which was my favorite of the series, and he did it. He was completely wrong. He was very clearly making things up. And the funny thing is he'd been actually like trying to read this book for a good like 6 months. It was on his desk, and like you could see him like at least trying to read, but failing very badly, obviously. And there's the part at the end of a book report. You know how the teacher's like, "Does anyone have any questions?"
Mm-hmm.
That was a mistake on her part, because I just like raised my hand and was like, why did you say this when this happened instead? Or why did you say this character died when they clearly did not? And like the teacher, she's like, okay, no more questions, no more questions, because he had no answers because he made the whole thing up. Very clearly made the whole thing up. And I was the smart ass who had to call him out publicly on it. We didn't get along before that, but we certainly did not get along after that. Yeah, but the reason I bring this up is because he came out with another book in the series called Murtagh, which is one of the characters in the series. It's from his perspective now. It's after this takes place. So the last book came out in 2011, 12 years later, on November 7th, 2023. He's like, here's another book. Go. I mean, he announced it beforehand, but it's like, hey, here's another book in this series that has no longer been relevant. but I still love deeply in my heart. I kind of want to go back and read it again just to see how good it is. But this dude wrote the first book when he was 15. And apparently one of my coworkers at our office wrote a book at the same time when she was 15 and like self-published it. And like one of the self-publishing companies that they went through, like put them together as like, here, you should be pen pals. So like my coworker Delta and Christopher Paolini were pen pals for a while, which is insane. I would have killed for that as a child. But yeah.
Kind of cool.
Oh god, that was the hardest I've nerd dumped about a book in forever. Me reading young adult fantasy children's books at age 28, almost 30. Yeah. God. Oh god, I feel like such a nerd right now. Moving on, before I talk more about books and stuff, nothing wrong with books, but Kevin, speedrunning, that exists, right?
Yeah, it exists. It's out there.
Duolingo, that exists, right?
Yeah, that also does exist, yes.
Would you ever think of speedrunning Duolingo?
It depends on, can I like retain the information? That's the main like purpose of Duolingo, right? But
ostensibly, I mean, yes.
I mean, you could hypothetically run it too. I mean, I wouldn't be mad if somebody sped run Duolingo. I think that'd be actually pretty cool if you could get through it.
Someone did speed run Duolingo. The mad lad did it. So normally you do Duolingo every day to try to like increase your language skills. It's a free app unless you go premium, but like, and also they have the most chaotic social media presence beside Wendy's that I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
Oh, my God.
You have no idea. Like on the anime side of things, it's even crazier because they've essentially there was a scene where like a character dies in like one of the more popular animes at the moment. And then they're like, why aren't you studying? And then they cosplayed the bird as like the person who like did him in.
And oh,
you're
no. Just
like, you're like, you're allowed to do this? Like, they're like, God, did you do your 20 minutes today? I'm like,
if I could work for weebs. Duolingo's social media or Wendy's social media, like that would, like, as much as I'm like getting burnt out by the social media job, working for those two companies, I feel like because they're so willing to do anything and they're so unhinged, like,
yeah,
I think that would like reinvigorate my interest in the industry. But yeah, so there's a YouTuber, Joe Zapinski, who went through all 205 units of Duolingo in a speed run. He thought it was going to take him 12 hours. He did it in 24. He already knew how to speak Spanish initially. He just wanted to like see if he could do all of Duolingo Spanish in one sitting, just for the shits and giggles of it. He thought it would take him 12 hours, took him double that, 24. He didn't go through every lesson. He just went through the unit tests for all 205 units. Mm-hmm. But like, what is 24? How many, let's see, 24 hours in a day. Let's do the math here. Let's see how long it took him per unit on average. So 24 times 60 minutes equals 1440 minutes divided by 205 units. So it's about 7 minutes per test.
Hmm. Oh, that's not too crazy. But
20, that's a 24-hour stream, goddamn.
Yeah.
There's no way you would actually like learn the language by doing that. You would have to know the language beforehand, yeah, which you did. But I mean, out of all the things to speedrun, Duolingo did not seem like a candidate in my book ever.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's just, it's there. I guess we're learning today.
I wonder if we could like doing an English, if you did English Duolingo, I wonder how that, yeah, would take us.
It's English, like, how fast can you run it in your own, like,
native,
in your native tongue? I think it'd make it a lot easier.
And then I think at that point, you'd also learn, like, where your language skills are very rusty.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting test. I'm not going to do it because I don't have 24 hours to spend on that and no reason to because I'm not a streamer, but yeah.
It's an option. It's out
you
there.
You can do it. You know what's not a speed run, Kevin, or at least wasn't a speed run?
I don't know.
The SAG-AFTRA strike.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was definitely a grind.
And as you can tell, and if you haven't heard already, we're talking in the past tense because the SAG-AFTRA strike is at this point tentatively over. 118 days of yelling at the studios to pay people what they're worth and to forget about using AI. The strike finally ended as of, like, officially they put the strike on pause as of midnight tonight, which was the 9th of September. So they've been done striking for a day now. They didn't release all the full details on the SAG-AFTRA website. All they noted is that there's going to be minimum compensation increases, I believe an 11% increase to minimum wage, provisions for consent and compensation that will protect members from the threat of AI, and for the first time establishes a streaming participation bonus. Our pension and health caps have been substantially raised, which will bring much needed value to our plans. In addition, the deal includes numerous improvements of multiple categories, including outsized compensation and increases for background performers and critical contact provisions protecting diverse communities. They're not going into specifics, but they said that they have these wins on hand. They've made the deal so far. They've won a lot of things. What they didn't get was the major thing that SAG-AFTRA, especially Fran Drescher, who is an actress and the president of SAG-AFTRA right now, wanted a percentage of revenue from streaming sites. They said absolutely not. She wanted initially 2% of streaming revenue, then went down to 1%, which was about $500 million a year. And the studios are like, no, forget that. You're not getting it. Instead, what they got was a $40 million annual streaming participation bonus, which, I mean, over the 3 years that this contract currently that they have is good. It's $120 million over the terms of the contract, $40 million a year. We'll wait and see if and when they release the full details of that contract. But for now, the members of SAG-AFTRA are going to read through what the deal is, and they're going to vote to ratify it or not. At this point, I think they're probably going to ratify it because they want to get back to work, and they've got a lot of what they wanted. If they don't, maybe it could be a position where the studios will even walk back some of their concessions instead of granting more. So at this point, I think that the strike is going to be over and things will slowly go back into the norm for Hollywood, if not a little bit better for the people working there. Yay. Moving on. So, Kevin, the Overwatch League, It doesn't exist anymore at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we saw it coming, right?
Yeah. We saw it coming from like a mile away.
That's the reason we changed the whole podcast to not be Overwatch League related anymore, because like it wasn't sustainable.
They fumbled the bag pretty hard. I just think that like, obviously, I feel like there was a lot of things that they could keep doing, but at the same time, like, you don't want to risk too much, especially if you're like a business like the league in general. You want to make sure that you're making money back. But
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the bag was really fumbled during the pandemic, and then also on the devs' part of just not working on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have big questions.
Do you think that if they'd updated the meta during GOATS to be more dynamic instead of just Orisa Brig forever? Do you think that even if the pandemic had happened, that we might still, like, if the scene was dynamic, if people were still watching it, because a lot of people dropped off during the GOATS meta, do you think if they were able to retain that peak viewership that they had, that they might have survived the pandemic a little bit better? Or was Or is it still just doomed to fail without the homestand model?
I think that if they paid attention to the game and gave us, like, I feel like the announcement and the letdown of Overwatch 2 literally led to the downfall of the game.
Okay.
If they kept everything the way how it was, like, literally, if, like, during GOAT's meta, if they just, like, took their time with it and we figured out, like, okay, yeah, this is coming in the future, or yeah, we're not going to get this, but at least we can see this coming in the foreseeable future. Like, all of that would have helped a lot. But what we ended up getting was just like this false promise of essentially having a game that would be, you know, game changing, would change the way how we play the game and, like, let us enjoy everything that Overwatch already offered us and more, was kind of what they were showing us, and then we just didn't get any of that. So
right.
that's the unfortunate truth of this. It's like, if they said, like, Overwatch 2 is, like, in the works and they'll, like, move it over as they're continuing development on Overwatch 1 and keeping all of that up, I would have been a lot more open to what they would offer us. But mm-hmm. right now it just feels like it's like there's not a lot being offered here.
Right.
And if anything, they took more away from Overwatch than gave to Overwatch.
Yeah, it was game changing, but, like, in the wrong direction.
Yeah, they took things away and called it a new game rather than added new things and, like, yeah, changed it that way.
Yeah. It's like that meme where it's like, I can fix him. I can make him worse. That's what happened here.
they made him worse.
So we saw this coming. The teams who are part of the league, by and large, I think it was about 2/3 of a vote to leave. So 2/3 of the teams who are part of the Overwatch League are taking the $6 million buyout from Blizzard each and leaving. That they're doing that, I guess, to prevent any lawsuits from the investors and the organizations. Blizzard is, they're getting some of their money back. The Overwatch League isn't dead per se. It's dead in its city-based form at the current moment. Activision, Blizzard, and Overwatch are looking into ways to have a third party, I don't call it vendor, but third party organization run the league next year in 2024. Although it's most likely, just with the failure of this iteration of the league, it's not going to be city based. So I wonder what it would be. Kevin, in your experience with, like, the esports community in general, like, would it just be like organizations as opposed to teams, or what other ways could they try?
Yeah, I do think that the best way of them going about it is to ditch this model that they have right now, where it's like, it's city based and, like, you're trying to rally from the teams and the city itself. I think that the play is to actually, like, I feel like the play should be to let the organizations choose where they want to go, and, like, not necessarily saying, like, oh, we want to be this city and this city, but rather have the orgs represent themselves and cultivate the scene from the beginning, rather than having it be like, oh, okay, well, we're going to try this and we're going to hope that this fits the bill and everything works out accordingly. It has to be done in a way where the orgs, the organizations and the teams have just enough say in how the games are, like, ran and participated in, rather than it just being like, okay, this is the one big league, this is what we're looking at, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
I do think that the best way of doing it would be, once again, just letting it be organized and then have the World Cup thing happen again. But instead, just have, like, one big tournament on the opposite side of the calendar, so that people could be like, okay, this time it is Overwatch. Like we're here to watch the Overwatch Grand Finals or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You could still set up the league format of it. But I do think that the way how, like, the events were, the season itself did not draw enough people in to make it sustainable, but also like the grand finals just felt like another game. It wasn't like something big that we should all be looking for.
It was just a longer version of normal season, it felt like.
Exactly. So it, yes, there is a cool way of like saying, oh, this is for like, you know, glory or whatever, but like I feel like the biggest thing that draws people to esports is prize pool. Like, that's the reason why Dota 2 is still like popular as hell. Like, nobody plays that game. Like, the only people who play that game are people who have been playing it for like 20 something years. But the second I drop $37.8 million as the number, you're like, oh shit, I gotta actually pay attention to this.
Right.
So, yeah,
that's real money.
That's real money. That's not like, that's not some like Bitcoin funny haha makeup number. That is half crowdfunded by the people who are watching your game. And that's what makes it so good. Like, it's funded by your players. The player base who are going to watch your game and are participating and enjoying your game are the ones who are funding your biggest tournament at the end of the year. And then, that's like, dedication. It's not for free. It's not like free either. Like, for the company itself, they're creating a bunch of content for the players during this time, because like this is the hypest time to play the game, right? It's just like,
yeah, it's this, when it's relevant again.
Yeah, it's like this is the time everybody's here to watch, like, you know, the seventh generation of this team play, and we'll see if like the captain who used to be on the first team ever like is still alive and still playing, and now he's the coach and you want him to finally get his ring. You know, it's kind of the same way as like in basketball, where you watch like certain players like grow over time, and then they like switch teams and then they become coaches. Like, when will they ever get their ring as a coach? Will they, like, so on and so forth? And yeah, there's a bunch of different storylines. You're here to enjoy the storyline of the esport, but I feel like that is the one model that I feel like has stood the test of time and should be replicated, is the, when you do have a big tournament, have it crowdfunded by your players and incentivize them with in-game items. So essentially, it's like, imagine like a really cool, excellent battle pass, right? You could buy levels to go up like faster if you don't want to like play through it. Obviously, that's like a good like business model for the battle pass like thing in general. And for the lazy people who have money. But that also contributes to your prize pool. And then the more that your game gets picked up, the more that people want to participate and help out your game, the more popular it gets, the bigger your prize pool, the more incentive people have to play it, and then so on and so forth. So yeah, that's just how I look at it. I don't like having to like ask for like sponsors to like lend in X amount of money. Right, I would much rather say like, hey, this is the biggest prize pool, this is all done by you guys. So like,
yeah, I mean, even then that like gets people to watch, because it's like, oh, people like me are funding this, this is something to pay attention to.
Yeah, that, and like in the compendium itself, which is the battle pass, they also have like mini bets that you can place on the side for like small currency buffs, right? So like, you don't lose anything, you just guess on who wins certain things. So they'll be like, all right, first person to die in this match, right? And you're just like, okay, who from which team is most likely to make a dumb play and just try to go in and get a kill early?
Yeah.
And it just gets people more excited to watch the games too.
I mean, because Overwatch, like, you did try to do that on their website, on the Overwatch League streams. They had on the side an option where you could vote, and if you got it right, you would get
more like
credits, or
you would
whatever.
Get like channel points, right?
Right, something like that.
Yeah, and that's fine for Twitch side too, but like also being able to like incentivize people watching, linking their account to your Twitch or YouTube, however they want to, and then watching it happen, like, really helps them out with like creating a better esports scene and having people like even show up for an event. The other thing that I feel like this is something that Pokemon, believe it or not, fumbled that I do think that a lot of other places can like remedy. You don't get the same incentives when you go to the event live, right? Mm-hmm. When I go to an event live, I cannot collect the Twitch like things. So like I missed out on like an emote because I wasn't watching Pokemon. I wasn't watching Pokemon Worlds from Twitch, right? But I feel like if you buy a ticket, either as a spectator or as a competitor at some of these events, you should get a code at the start that gives you said thing and or something else on top of it for being there physically, you know? That way you also incentivize people to buy the ticket and be like, hey, like you buy the ticket, we'll give out like this specific event enamel pin, right? Like it's something that's really small, but it could one, commemorate the moment, commemorate like the event that you're going to. And two, you cannot get that through Twitch. Like you cannot get that through like just watching the games. Like, yeah, you could get it through watching the games and then just have a code. Like if you're really dedicated, you have somebody at home just like have Twitch open the whole time and then you just go to the event.
I mean, when I was doing like things and I was having the Overwatch stream open, what I would do is I would like just leave my computer running.
Yeah, that's the thing that you would do for like the SEA games, right? Like the OCE games, right? On the other side of the world, you just leave it open. You put your computer, you like just turn off all the monitors and then you go to sleep. And then you wake up and you have Overwatch League points, right?
I absolutely did that for like the APAC region games.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you do it. So I feel like you should incentivize people who do make the trip out to the location. They should get rewarded with something other than like merch, like other than exclusive merch from the store, because that's still money that they have to shell. Give them the Twitch things, give them all the Twitch stuff because they're here, and then give them something small on top of that. I don't know. I'm just an esports like guy. If I were to create a game or like help out with like the competitive part about this, I feel like that would be, you know, helpful. But then again, these companies have millions and millions of dollars. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just some unemployed gamer. So at the end of the day, I'm just a fan of games and I want the fans to be treated right first. But we don't know how that's going to go moving forward, you know?
Right. I mean, I will say that like when back in the early days of the league, when Blizzard Arena first opened, there was a day when they gave everybody who came a free Soldier 76 statue. I feel like they were just like leftovers that they had just to incentivize it, but it was nice. It was like I definitely have to be in the audience for that because I want this stupid Soldier 76 statue. And it was a fun day. I really enjoyed it. I think the Outlaws were playing that day. And they were my favorite team because they were a fun team to watch and root for, even though they like kind of disappointed us. And like Lynxer's girlfriend was there and she was always really attractive. So really quickly, Kevin, just even with all of those fixes, say they do everything right, and they emulate the best of the leagues and they make all the right moves with this new iteration. Even with that, like, considering that they failed this first time, do you think that anyone would really be willing to invest in the Overwatch League again? Or is this first failure like, you're done already?
That's a good question. I feel like Overwatch itself needs to get its fans back in one way or another, whether it's re-announcing 6-on-6 or like finding a way to bring the players back first. That's step one. Like if you said, oh shit, PvE is done, and then just be like, psych, here's a mission, right? Like just don't tell us that you're working on it, just hide it and then drop it on us out of nowhere, right? You'll get more people to play, and more people playing equals more interest, which then will bring back the league. So I feel like in conclusion, if you're working on the league, you need to make sure that the game itself gets hype back. There has to be something that's drastic enough to bring back older players that gets them involved, and then wait a little bit for that growth to come back and then reboot the league. I feel like that's the only way to really do it.
realistically, like, take away all the hypotheticals. Mm-hmm. Is it coming back, or is it just gonna, like, are they just saying that they're gonna try to improve it and then it just dies again?
Knowing Blizzard, they'll probably work on some other game and then they'll be like, oh, here's the new game. We'll create the Overwatch League for this, and then Overwatch will be like, okay, well, we have a couple players playing. Yeah, we're done. So honestly, I feel like they could take what they learned from the Overwatch League and adapt it into something else. But I don't think that Overwatch itself has enough to survive and sustain to create the league again.
Okay. Even with, like, all the changes allegedly coming from Blizzard, like BlizzCon, that they announced, like, two new heroes coming, a new game mode, like a bunch of all that stuff, that's like, I at least the people that I talk to who I still play with, like, are excited to see that. But even with those changes on the horizon, you think it's dead?
I think you have to give us a Netflix special in order to really bring us back.
You mean the thing that they announced so long ago that never came to fruition?
Yeah, and or PvE, one of the two.
Well, then we'll see if that ever comes to light.
Soon. Blizzard soon.
Blizzard soon.
It's always Blizzard soon.
So to wrap up the Overwatch stuff really quickly, I do still kind of want to buy a jersey just to commemorate it. So, like, I looked on their website and I think everything right now is like 50% off. So if you want something, now's the best time to do it, because you'll probably never get another chance again to own some of the merch. I'm probably just going to get, like, because they don't have any of the black, or like, you can't even customize them anymore. So I'm just going to get like a white Outlaws jersey, because they don't have any of the other 2022 merch and I didn't watch in 2023. So anyway, moving on, because I have a few other things I want to run through. Kevin, did you ever watch Yahtzee doing game reviews with The Escapist?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so The Escapist was a pretty big, I guess, I wouldn't call them a force, but they were a big, pretty big force in the gaming industry world. Like, a lot of people really liked how Yahtzee did the no or zero punctuation reviews. He just kind of like really quickly ran through, like, again, no punctuation, because he was speaking very, very fast and very breathlessly. Some opinions about games and like reviews about games. I, in general, really liked his takes on gaming. Some of them I didn't fully trust, because he's the person who said that, oh, The Artful Escape was a good game, and after that, I tried it and it was terrible. So some of his opinions I didn't fully agree with, as with any critic, but like in general, he was pretty fair, and he was kind of cynical, but that was just shtick, but it was fun. The Escapist was a big force in the gaming journalism industry, but at this point, they are not the Escapist that we knew and loved, because the parent company, GAMURS, I don't know if it's pronounced Gamers or whatever, but the parent company for The Escapist said that their editor-in-chief was not meeting goals or whatever that they had set for the company. And so when they fired him, a bunch of people left, including Yahtzee, who was pretty much the public face, or he didn't show his face, but like the public voice of the company, because he did the zero punctuation reviews. So their entire like video team, a bunch of their staff writers left or were fired. And I think within like what, 24, 48 hours, they created their new company, the Second Wind. So they are going to do their own thing. Although, since The Escapist still owns the rights to like the names of all their popular content, like Zero Punctuation, they're going to have to find a new way to market themselves. But like, they have the built-in follower base who are going to follow them. I think that the company, for firing these people that everyone knew and loved on the internet, I think that they just shot themselves in the foot. If their goal really was to become profitable or to at least maintain profit, I don't think anyone's going to pay attention to them anymore. Kind of how like when LA Weekly fired all of its folks, that publication essentially went down by the wayside. I think it's one of those things where you're trying to save money, but by alienating the community and the people that your fans trust and getting rid of them, you are just putting the nails in your own coffin. Moving on, so a lot of trailers and a lot of things were released or were talked about in the wake of the SAG-AFTRA strike being lifted. For example, we got a new trailer today for Inside Out 2, where anxiety moves in, so hooray for puberty. Arcane won Anime of the Year, right, Kevin?
Which one?
Arcane.
Won Animation of the Year? I don't anime remember.
Of the year? Like, did was it Anime of the Year? I think it was. If it wasn't,
I'd be surprised if it won Anime of the Year at like something, but I could see it for like maybe Best Animated Series or something like that.
Oh, it was what award show is that? Oh, the Game Awards. It won Best Game Adaptation. That's what it was.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
The award it won. I was thinking Edgerunners won Anime of the Year, right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's where I was confused because they're both Netflix. But speaking of Arcane is coming back in 2024 for another season. The original cast is returning. So if you like that show, which pretty much everyone did, it's coming back.
I realized that I played enough TFT now to like maybe understand Arcane, so I'm probably gonna go back and like see if anything from this auto chess game, like now I could understand more of the lore and like why certain characters work together and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I know nothing of the lore and like just, but watching the show made me want to get into it. I just don't have the time because I do too many things. Speaking of time, it's been since 2013, it's been 10 years. And in those 10 years, everyone's been speculating about when Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to come. Well, we don't know when it's going to come officially, but Rockstar has announced that they will be releasing a trailer in December, and the internet went absolutely crazy for that. There were a lot of reactions about like, oh my God, is it actually going to come, or are they just debating us again? But we're getting a trailer in December. That's all we know. Apparently the map, from previous reports, and again, you can never trust the ones that about GTA 6 because they were all speculating about when the release date would be and they were all wrong. But allegedly this map is going to be huge. Allegedly it's going to be taking place in San Andreas again, but we'll see. You know, another thing that was announced, Kevin, that I kind of shocked me?
Mm.
The goddamn Zelda movie.
Oh.
Did you hear about this?
I heard about it. I don't know if it's happening. Like...
Oh, it's happening. It's a real thing. It's going to be Nintendo and Sony are going to make a live action Legend of Zelda movie. Avi Arad, who is one of the producers, let me bring up his IMDb real quick because he's got some credits. Avi Arad, IMDb. Okay, so in the past, this man has produced Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
Spider-Man No Way Home, a bunch of the Spider-Mans. But on the other hand, he's also produced Morbius, Uncharted, and Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
So it's like, this can go one of two ways. This can be either amazing because he's done the Spider-Man stuff, or it could be awful. It could be morbidly. Get it?
Morbiously awful. Yes.
Oh man. Yeah, it's happening. They're actually making a live action Zelda movie, and people were Oh, hold on. Also, the director for this movie is going to be Wes Ball. Let's look his IMDb up. Wes Ball. He's directed The Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, Maze Runner, The Death Cure. What else? Give me his director credits. He's directing The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is coming. No, but it's pretty much just The Maze Runners. That's what he's directed. 3 Maze Runner movies. But he's going to be directing Zelda. He's going to be directing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. He's going to be directing Mouse Guard, which is a comic book series. So I've never seen the Maze Runner movies beyond the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch Scorched Trouser, Death Cure, but like, I mean, good for him.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is good for us. I don't know if this is good for Zelda, but this is good for him. I remember years ago, IGN put out an April Fool's Day prank where they made a trailer for a Twilight Princess. So it looked like a Twilight Princess adaptation movie. And it looked really good. And then my little heart was broken when I realized, wait, what day is it today? Oh no, it's April 1st. This is a fake. There was also the cartoon way back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, princess. But yeah, that's happening. And people are like kind of memeing it already, saying like who their quote unquote fan casting would be. Some of them are real. Some of them are like just jokes. Like some people want Hunter Schafer to be Princess Zelda, which she kind of looks like it. Some people are saying that Nathan Fielder should play Link. And if you know Nathan Fielder, he does a lot of really absurd comedy. Like the show Nathan For You, he had as a gimmick to get this frozen yogurt shop to sell more frozen yogurt, he had them sell poop flavored frozen yogurt. He's also done the show. What's the one on HBO? I can't remember what it's called, but it's really awkward, and it's like you can't tell where the line you can't tell where the line between like reality and the comedy is with him, and it's fantastic. The Rehearsal, that's the name of the show. The funniest thing they could do here would be to cast Chris Pratt as Link. Pitch.
Yeah.
Make everyone in the live-action Zelda movie Muppets except Link, who will be played by Michael Caine. Although I think he retired. Cast Jeremy Allen White from The Bear screaming as Link. And there's a photo of him in like a green cap and a green shirt just yelling.
I would be on board with that one.
I love The Bear.
Yeah, Simon The Bear Helberg, was great.
Simon Helberg is the natural choice for Beetle. If there was a perfectly correct casting for the Zelda movie, this would be it. It's the guy who plays Howard in, I think it's Howard, in Big Bang Theory. He's the one with a bowl cut.
Yeah.
I hope we can see Michael Cera as Toon Link.
That'd be a good like cameo.
Please cast Matt Berry as Error in the live action Zelda movie. Thank you. Ganondorf as Adam Sandler.
All right. That's a stretch.
But I mean, I swear, if Chris Pratt touches any of this, the internet will riot. Because no one actually wants Chris Pratt. But like, how do you think this is gonna go, Kevin? I don't know, honestly.
Like, I think it comes down to casting, but it also comes down to like how it's received generally
too.
And execution. Yeah,
Link is a silent protagonist. I don't think anyone actually liked when he spoke in the country.
And like, it's totally fine if he doesn't speak. You have to get somebody who's good enough to like betray everything that, you know, Link is thinking. But like, I mean, if anybody has seen the masterpiece, what was it called? Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah, that worked. Yeah,
like it worked. So you can do it. It's definitely doable.
I just, this feels wrong to me in so many ways. It just feels like this movie should not be happening. We'll see if it's any good. I don't think it's going to be, but that's not for me to say because I'm not the ones making this. And I mean, I didn't think that Illumination would do a good job with the Mario movie, but they did a pretty good job with the Mario movie. So, I mean, I was wrong. I admit it. I was wrong. Chris Pratt wasn't the best, but the movie was fun. Anyway, you know what other movies in the works, Kevin? Or actually, no. Who would you cast as Link? Ganondorf and Zelda. Who are your dream cast for that?
Okay, this is just a it's a tough question in general, because like I also am in the camp of Link should not talk. I think that we have to do it in a way where, like, I don't know. There's just so many good options. And then it depends on, like, which version of Link you want to go with, too. Like, if they... I don't know how they would go if they went, like, Breath of the Wild Link or, like, had to do, like... Well, Toon Link would be funny, but that's, like, an Illuminations thing.
Ugh. Let's stop bringing
him
into this, please.
Yeah, I really don't know what they would do with this. Like, I feel like anybody... I feel like you should cast a nobody. Like, somebody... Like, for each one of the roles, just do somebody who fits the bill that has no, like, crazy star power and just let them, like, do the Marvel treatment where you, like, pick some random person and just let them, like, embody the role.
Mm.
And then let that speak for itself in the theater. Like, I feel like that's the best way of going about it.
Okay, okay. Do you think the Jeremy Allen White treatment would work?
I wouldn't mind.
He's fantastic in The Bear.
He is fantastic in The Bear. But would you want him as Link?
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it.
I could see it as Link. Yeah. He has to just walk around and just, like, nod every once in a while. It'd be so awkward to, like, go from that and then to The Bear or vice versa. Like,
I mean, I just found out he was in Shameless. And I mean, I've never seen the show before, but I just found out he was in Shameless because I keep seeing clips of it on TikTok while I'm working. But anyway, Kevin, you know what other movie is in the works?
Hmm.
Barbenheimer.
Wait. Those are two different movies.
No. No.
Together?
It's one movie. It's gonna be one movie. Let me see if I can find the synopsis for this really quickly. The tagline is D cup, A bomb. This is being directed by Charles Brand, who's, I guess, a B movie filmmaker. Let's look at before I read the description. Let's look at his IMDb because that's what we're doing right now. No, it's not really saying who he is. I can't find him on IMDb. There's only one Charles Brand that's coming up as a director, but he's done, like, Billy Elliot and other things that, like, no one knows about. So, I mean, I guess that fits with what he's doing. But anyway, here's the description. It follows Dr. Bambi J. Barbenheimer, a brilliant scientist living in Dolltopia, a world of endless summers and beach parties, and her boyfriend Twink Dahlman. Dr. Barbenheimer, incensed by the brutal treatment dolls receive at the hands of human children, ventures into the real world, where she experiences humanity in its worst, and naturally decides to build a giant nuclear bomb to take it all out. He admits that it's very silly, and it's absolutely a cash grab, absolutely, like, playing into the hype of Barbenheimer. He fully admits that, but it's like... It's not going to work because, at least with Barbenheimer, it was an organic thing where they just happened to release on the same day and people mashed them together because they were so opposite. Like, forcing this, it's not going to make any money. No one's actually going to, I don't think anyone's going to go see this unless they're going for the memes, if it gets actually released and made anywhere. It just, it feels wrong. I don't like it. But that's just me.
Yeah, I feel like if this is, like, another, like, dumb, like, scary movie, like, meme kind of movie, I feel like it would make some money, but I don't think anybody would, obviously, like, a lot of people aren't taking it seriously, but I don't know if it's going to be big enough to, like, make a profit, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
People should just, like, not make movies sometimes. Anyway, I think that's it for me. Kevin, your turn.
Yay. All right. There's just a couple of things that I have. Lots of it coming from the League of Legends world. I mean, we're talking about Arcane. returning in 2024, which is kind of big. But there's a lot of like event stuff going on in the esports side as well. Right now, V-Flight, who we've had on the show a couple times, he's currently observing for Worlds right now, which is taking place in Korea. So if you want to watch his work or his coworkers' work, they happen to be live whenever. So if you do see any of the cool like in-game slow-mo highlights, that's all done by V. But the nice. Main observing is done by his coworkers. But he's been doing a couple of TikToks about like a couple of the behind-the-scenes shots. So if you want to see like what they have to go in and do, you can. So that's something that like not everybody has access to. And yeah, Worlds is just kind of the biggest hype right now. A lot of people are on board just watching the games. I don't follow League that much. I am more on the side of the TFT. I'm the slow gamer, even slower than the MOBA scene. So that's where I live. But yeah, going from League to TFT, I guess that's a good transition since we're still talking about Riot. We are about to head into a new patch and a new event. So yesterday we had a client patch for League of Legends, 13.22, which pretty much just made a couple of balance changes. It's only going to be live for like a week and a half or so. But this is pretty much like the end of the battle pass and the end of this current patch that we have with like Bilgewater, Piltover, and so on and so forth. The next patch is something that I've been keeping up with the TFT on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And just looking at what they're up to. Yes, same. But they have new factions coming out, but they're all based off of concerts and music. So we have like, for example, we have like KDA returning. We have Heartsteel, which is that new boy band from League. But there's also going to be like other quote unquote like headliners who will be like classes in the game. So we'll be keeping an eye out for what the patch itself actually looks like. But essentially, they're going to completely change the meta, and we're just going to have like this whole music festival kind of vibe thing going on. But I believe that...
Is DJ Khaled going to perform?
I hope not. they're saying that this all leads up to like an IRL event in Vegas where there's a TFT open where they'll invite some of the top players to play at the esports arena at the Luxor. And then also have some performances by the bands who actually perform some of those songs and some of the trailer music and stuff. So that's something pretty cool. If you guys want to see what the client looks like in TFT, there's a lot of like, you have to scroll around and look at everything, but there are going to be different classes and everything is like, essentially we got a nice little like update patch. And then we're about to get an overhaul of the whole thing in about like in a couple of days. I believe it's supposed to go live on the 22nd, but it might be the 19th as well. We're still unsure about the exact date. On top of that, they've given us a new mode called Chonk's Treasure. It's Chonk with two C's, not at the beginning, but at the end. The point of this one is that it's kind of a faster game mode. They give you a level 4 or level 5 unit to start on your board, and then you just get piles and piles of items really early in the game, and then you just build a really strong board and then you go from there. So it's a really interesting game mode. It's fast, so a lot of people have to like get on board with it. But I would say that like if you're looking to just have a quick game, just play Chonk's Treasure. If you're playing with friends, there's no reason to play normal when you have like this faster, funner game mode available. So yeah, TFT patch coming out pretty soon. But right now we're just kind of sitting in this kind of waiting room, waiting for this new music patch to come out. All right, we're going to still keep it in the Riot realm. Let's talk about Valorant. I don't know how long ago they put this guy in. To be honest, I've been under a rock when it comes to Valorant. But I was able to watch some gameplay and have my friend play ISO for the first time. So it's like my first time experiencing and playing into ISO. I believe, yeah, ISO is a... He's a new duelist in the game, yes. And he has a lot of abilities that allow him to go literally like try to isolate out a fight, with hence his name ISO. His ultimate literally takes somebody out of the game and puts them in a 1v1 against ISO. That is his ultimate ability. He has a shield that he could walk behind. He has an ability called Double Tap, where if you kill an enemy, a little orb spawns above them, and if you shoot that orb, you get a full shield that blocks one full instance of damage. Which is kind of cool. It gives you like one headshot invulnerability if they're good and they want to hit the headshot, but we'll make sure that you're alive to at least see a second. And yeah, overall a really interesting character. I do think that it's going to be the new like ego pick compared to like Reyna. Reyna at least used to like help out your team, where you would be able to just like go in and like maybe blind around a corner for a friend and then take a fight, but most of it was like, I'm the one who has to do all the work and I'm going to be the one to get all the kills. It kind of feels the same way with ISO. So it's kind of a win more character rather than a, or like you have to have crazy confidence to play it. So I feel like that is just the way how this character operates. It's interesting. But definitely not my playstyle. I play a little bit slower. I like the smokes and the and like making sure sight lines are cut off and so on and so forth. But ISO players definitely like the duelist mentality, just constantly going and trying to get some KOs. All right. Let's move on into anime and manga news now. We're switching hats from esports to manga and anime.
Yay,
first things first, let's talk about AOT, the finale. It is finally over. AOT has finally finished. And a lot of my friends are like finally relieved about it, because obviously it's been a 10-year journey.
Has it really been 10
it's,
years?
It's been 10 years since we've had AOT air. So a lot of us have grown up with it. I mean, I've grown up with it. I remember watching the first episode and being like, damn, that was wild. And then watching the entirety of season one, having fun and like hanging out with friends. And then now I have no... Just kidding. No. Now AOT is starting to end. It is the end of the anime itself, so it has encompassed everything that Isayama finally put out in terms of his manga, and it is finally animated and it is done. So if you want to watch AOT in its entirety, go for it. I still need to do it. I stopped after the end of season 3, so I gotta get back to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it and seeing the journey of the character. But I know that this is definitely a big, like, this is a big moment for a lot of like anime fans who may have grown up with AOT. It is like, this is like the grand finale. This is it.
It seems so crazy that it's over after 10 years. It's one of the few anime that I haven't finished, obviously, because I'm busy.
Yeah.
And it just ended too. So like, it feels so weird because I really enjoyed that. And I like, it's one of the few anime that I watched because friends like recommended it to me and I could talk to them about it. And it had such a huge cultural impact in like people, like they added it into games. People started making the hip launcher thingies.
The 3D maneuver gear.
Yeah. That thing that people are making them in real life. I've seen like people like model them, and it just, so many cosplays.
Cool.
Wow. It's over. It's the end of an era.
It is an end of the era. It is interesting as well. At least for me, when I heard that it was finally over, I heard that like a lot of people are saying when this ends, like there's going to be a lot of anime fans who will like have to be and like learn to branch out into other stuff, because this is kind of like a big cultural event. It's not like the White Woman's One Piece, but like it is. By the way, White Woman's One Piece is Grey's Anatomy. Should probably point that out. But AOT like ending is like the end of like a really like big era for a lot of first time, like I would even consider them like early anime fans. So I'm excited that it has a finale. I still have to read through it and or watch through it. I'm probably gonna watch it. But we'll definitely be keeping an eye out for if Isayama comes out with anything else to supplement this, or if there's like an anniversary edition or something like that that's coming in the works. Because the cool thing about usually when something finishes, they either start releasing like a commemorative box set or doing something to celebrate the work of AOT. Right now, AOT comes in quote unquote box sets, but they only come in box sets of like, I think it's like five, anywhere between four and like seven books each. And they're each broken up into a different like core of the anime, or like different cores and different arcs of Attack on Titan. But there's no like definitive like big box version of AOT. So I feel like obviously if it approaches the 10-year anniversary, the end of the anime and manga, I feel like they should announce like an AOT like commemorative something.
Yeah, it's to be expected after 10 years of it. Like,
yeah,
you could sell so many of those.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I'm really interested in wondering is, does Isayama have another idea in mind? Like, did he end AOT and watch the end of AOT to get that itch again where he's like, man, I want to write another manga? Or is he like satisfied with AOT and just wants to like let this breathe as its own thing, you know?
I mean, he's kind of want to take a break now that it's over, just at least yeah, for sure. Rest. But I mean, yeah. I can't see him like as a creative, like just being, I'm done creating forever.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like he's going to come back with something and people are going to be like looking at it and wondering if this is going to be like another masterpiece. And that's like, I feel like this is something that I'll talk about closer to the manga section. But yeah, creators coming back to like add more or to create something brand new. I feel like that's another thing that I'm excited to see if Isayama does anything about it. The next thing that I want to talk about is Zom 100, Bucket List of the Dead, is finally getting its final three episodes. So good news, we're ending season one. Yay! Bad news is, it's on Christmas. We don't get the last three episodes until Christmas. It was
far away.
We had hiccups. They had a lot of production hiccups, a lot of problems with like getting episodes sunk up and getting everything in time. But it is a really good series that I would recommend. Like, even where they stopped is not a bad part. But obviously, like, you want to complete out the series, you want to complete out the mission. Go ahead and let them clear that up on Christmas. If you guys are impatient, by the way, though, I do have a TikTok on where to start if you want to buy the manga or read the manga and just want to read where it's left off so far. I'm planning on doing a couple more of those for some of these other series that may have more seasons to come or have stopped abruptly after one season. So definitely will help you guys out with that. All right. The other thing that I do want to mention really quickly, The Great Pretenders, if you guys have watched that on Netflix, apparently is getting an announcement about something later on this month, so I will be keeping an eye out for that as well. That's another good Netflix anime series that you guys should keep in mind. If you guys like Cowboy Bebop, you'll love The Great Pretenders. So that's another one to just keep in mind there. All right, let's move from the animation to the manga. There's only a couple things. These earlier weeks are super, super slow. So we have the manga releases for this week is literally One Piece 104, Blue Box 7, Pancreas, which is my pancreas exploded, but my life got better by Nagata Kabi. Same person who wrote My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, My Wandering Warrior, and she had another one about alcoholism, but it's a really dark series about, like, not dark, but like it's just an autobiographical like series about her life getting terrible, but she's learning from that and making it into a solid manga. It won a few awards and it's actually big enough right now that her first one, My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, is getting a hardcover. So definitely check it out. If you've never read that one, it won Manga of the Year, I think it was like 2020 or something like that. But it's a very good, very good series to come out from them. Last but not least, Shangri-La Frontier Book 8 came out this week. Next week, there's only like three, literally only three. So there's 365 days till the wedding, which is another rom-com to keep in mind. D. Gray Man 28, which finally comes over here. And then Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, first volume, all color. Dragon Maid Color is coming out. So all of it it's the same manga, same volume one, but just every panel is colored. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind. I think the 21st is going to be a big day for manga. And I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for that week and what's being released, and tentatively adding them to my cart.
Tentatively.
I'm going to buy them.
All right, everybody. Well, I think that wraps it up for us this week. Hope you enjoyed all the news that we've covered. And again, next week, we are going to be publishing the interview that we do with Maddie, who did voice directing things. Hooray. That sounds interesting. And it's something I wish I could do. It'd be fun. I'm rambling again. Kevin, advice before I ramble more.
Play games you like. Don't play them if they're not fun.
Yeah, that's solid advice. I would say that's good advice. Anyway, thanks guys for tuning in with us this week, and we will catch you on the flip side. Adios.
Next week, we will be bringing on a special guest.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us and rate us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can also follow us on all social media at TwigPod, that's TwigPod, and feel free to send us any questions, comments, or any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover. If you'd like to advertise with our show, please contact our network at Bleav.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week in Geek.